So the Galaxy Fold, right?
Yes.
The Galaxy Fold. It started the thing. It went to market. It had the issues initially with the reviewers and the dust and the crease and the pixels and the screen damage.
A lot of problems.
It had the stuff going on, which I should remind people, it did not happen to my original Galaxy Fold, but that one went back. And then that was replaced because they made a couple of changes. Whatever it was they could make. They tightened up the hinge area a little bit, tried to stop things from getting in there. They reinforced, Will, as you would. They didn't want to give up on it, right? Because it's this kind of situation I told you in the past. It's this kind of situation where you have this new technology, the ability to fold a display. And then you say to yourself, okay, maybe we don't know exactly yet what the perfect implementation is, but we want to be there. We want to be a part of the early stuff. So you can't just immediately put it down. You kind of got to commit for a little bit. And today we have a new development in that commitment. We have a product which to me kind of looks like an indication that Samsung has learned something even bigger than those minor changes that they made to the original Galaxy Fold. We have a product called the W25G, and it appears to be the next iteration of something that the Galaxy Fold started. So not a revamp, not a slight adjustment, but instead something a little bit more major. Now, it's important to note, it kind of shares the same mechanics, but some things are obviously different. The shape of it is different. The hinge is different. The gap is different. These are some areas that, of course, had where problems had come up in the past. So this new device, the W20 5G, that's an important piece to put in there as well, because obviously it's going to support 5G. It popped up thanks to our pal Ice Universe. And he kind of showcases a little quick comparison. And to me, what stands out here is that it looks like a product based on the Fold, but not the Fold. It looks like a quick move, a pivot of sorts. It looks like, okay, we got these problems with the Fold. We see areas in which we can make improvements beyond those quick fixes. We see a way in which we can reconfigure it structurally from a design perspective to make some improvements based on what we've learned beyond the Band-Aid type fixes. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, we can throw 5G in there. As you can see, it's less curved. It's more angular on the edges there. You see it closes tighter, Will. Mm-hmm. There's less of a, it looks less like a, you're squeezing a sandwich or something. I mean, I don't recommend you squeeze your sandwich.
It looks like the old one looks like a wedge.
Oh, there it is. That's the word. A wedge.
Yeah.
A wedge, a little ramp to it. You could wedge your door open with the old one.
Mm-hmm.
The new one, it almost looks like it's closed flat. More like a sandwich, actually.
Yes.
That is what you want your sandwich to look like. You don't want a lopsided sandwich.
No. This looks more like a successful sandwich.
You ever had a grilled cheese or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a discussion the other day if you can put tomato on a grilled cheese or not. I think it's fine.
You think so?
I think it's fine. Kirk's shaking his head no. So anyway, don't put a tomato on your Galaxy Fold. I don't recommend it. Although the W25G might be engineered for such a purpose.
Yeah, it's got IP rating.
It's got tomato rating. As for the W20's internals, Samsung will upgrade the Snapdragon to the 855 Plus. Little tiny boost there. It's still going to have the 12 gigs of RAM, 512 storage. The battery shrinks a little bit, like ever so slightly, which is strange, but I guess it's to match the new slightly slimmer form factor. It's going to be 4235 milliamp hour rating, which is down from 4380, so kind of insignificant, but yes, it's down. We can see the image here that Will's showcasing. The whole thing just seems a bit tighter. Just seems a bit tighter to me. Now, the important thing to mention, this is set to go on sale in China. So there's not really a lot of information as to whether or not this is a replacement for the Galaxy Fold and why it is as well, Will, that you would avoid Fold the branding altogether.
Yeah.
You just go for the W20.
Yeah. Why?
W20. Oh, it's just another phone. It's just a W20 release. Come on. You got something cooler than that going on.
So do you think this is like a soft launch or something?
Do you know what I think, Will? I think Samsung is kind of backing off a little bit. They're saying to themselves, look, the thing happened with the Fold. We're invested in the idea of it, but we also understand that it's going to be a process. So we're just going to call it W20 because we make so many phones anyways. W series, whatever. Maybe they keep going with the W thing. You got the S, you got the Note. Maybe W
is like their new line.
Maybe it should have been V though, because of, you know, the folding.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. Who am I? They've had W's before. They've probably, they're Samsung. You use every letter in the book at this point.
Yes.
Galaxy, the J's, A, B, C, D.
The M's, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, you know me.
It's actually a good idea to launch it in China. I mean, the Mate X just launched and it got sold out, right?
Okay. So you think there's an appetite? Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
All
if
right.
The Mate X is successful.
Will he do?
You know?
Will he do?
Ming Chi do.
Whoa, easy today.
That's a little much. No.
Why are you feeling? What are you?
Why that you just came up.
Why are you feeling so good today?
Yeah. Well, I had a coffee.
You did. You did, didn't
Free
you?
Free coffee.
What?
Shout out Starbucks.
Free?
Yeah, I went in with Otis and they wouldn't let me in with Otis. So they're just like, oh, what are you taking? Okay, I'll have a coffee, and then they brought it out. I was like, I wanted to pay, but they were just like, no, I got you. Shout out Starbucks. It's not an ad.
Are you getting some kind of celebrity treatment out there in the world?
Well, no, it's just the dog thing.
You're saying Otis is the celebrity out there?
I don't know. Is that guy a fan?
Yeah, don't downplay it, Will.
They know Kirk.
You're out there in the world. You're taking special treatment these days. You're a different guy. I don't know you anymore.
Yeah, I'll always request.
You're just out here demanding free coffee. You're like, I got the dog, so figure it out.
Yeah. Do what you need to do.
What a story. All right, W20 goes on sale in China in December. And possibly after that, this upgraded device could show up in the U.S. and U.K. We'll see what happens. But maybe that's the case. Maybe you put it out in China, and it's kind of like a soft launch. It's kind of like a trial run.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this one does better. You see less units coming back that have some sort of durability issue, or you get a sense for the customer satisfaction, at which point you then say to yourself, let's roll this baby out. We think we've cracked it a little bit better than the initial version. The Fold always felt to me like a beta sort of device, like a trial run. As soon as I held it, it had that feeling to it, Will. Like mm-hmm. It was just a step in the eventual place. Like a lot of technology products. I've used plenty of technology products over the years, which they have that kind of vibe to them.
Very ambitious.
Yeah, you just feel like you're on the fringe. And you're kind of being careful with it because you recognize the fringiness of the engineering. So I always expected it to be short-lived in that form factor, that they would quickly move on and learn a lot from putting the device out into the world. So this is even quicker than I expected for us to see this. And like I said, I think from the branding, calling it the W20, you can see what Samsung's trying to do. I think they really are trying to experiment in public here because in the internals of this thing are very similar to the Fold. So why do it?
Mm-hmm.
Why go through the process? I mean, you got to put the whole team on it. You got to say, yeah, I mean, the internal's not upgrade too much. Yeah, it's just an 855 plus. But I want you to totally reconstruct the thing. You got to have a reason. So they obviously think it's better. So I'm curious to check it out if I get the chance.
Do you like the fact that they kept continuing?
Yeah, but, yeah, absolutely. Project? I'm not one of these people. Look, this stuff is hard, man. So I'm not one of these people ranting and raving. Never ranted before. It's never happened. Rave, no chance. Never raved. No, but I'm not one of these people that wants to. I don't want to discourage the idea of experimentation. This is why I was putting out the message on the fold. Look, if you buy one, embrace the aspect that this is fringy. And it's not going to be as robust as picking the form factor, which is tried and true. Mm. This is the idea of buying a first generation anything and having crazy, ridiculous expectations. I was putting that message out there. So I think a brand, you want to encourage a brand to be ambitious and to experiment, but you also want to, as a customer, appreciate what you're engaging in and adjust your expectations from there. So I don't mind it. I understand, though, as well, you pay the $2,000, you get the screen screw up, and you're not feeling too happy. I understand that, and I have sympathy for that. And sometimes I got to remind myself, because the products, they just show up over here. I got to remind myself mm-hmm. that you're just, as much as you want to partake in the fringe, it can be an expensive endeavor mm-hmm. in the technology realm. So we got to just, you have to evaluate the whole picture, not just the thing as it sits there right now, the whole picture. If you want to partake in the cutting edge, you have to adjust your own threshold along the way. Mm-hmm. But I've been doing that for years.
Yes.
Even before this channel. I took risks on products. The first MP3 player I ever bought, garbage. Put two songs on it. People are like, "What are you doing, man? You paid what for? You paid what for that? You're ripping. You take a CD. You're ripping a CD. You're putting two MP3s on that chunky thing."
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there saying, "Well, that's not the whole part of it for me. For me, it's also an experiment. It's an experiment from the manufacturer. It's an experiment for me, the user." So I embrace the fact that it ain't perfect yet. Mm-hmm. That's okay. That's the message I want to put out, at least. I haven't always done the best job of that, but that's the message that's the message I feel is important.
Right on.
As a big picture. Yeah. Xiaomi, they're not happy about this latest Oppo Reno Ace thing that we showcased on the channel. We showcased the fastest charging smartphone in the world.
Super VOOC
2.0. Yes,
2.0.
And that was right on the tip of your tongue. You weren't waiting. This coffee thing is really working out for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's really working out for you. You're just...
Full of
might
beans.
Be too much. I don't know. It's overwhelming. I watched the thing. I'm on the show here. It's coming at me. It's firing. I'm dodging.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is when it comes to... Vooked, right? So I have to say it.
Oh, you're super vooked.
Fast charged, ready to go. Charged in less than 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You got boosted with the coffee, of course.
Oh yeah.
So Xiaomi, they saw that video. They saw me enjoying the quick charge, looking at the the meter going up in real time. They saw Jack's editing on the video. They saw all of it. Xiaomi did.
Yeah, Mr. Xiaomi.
Yeah, they went in the boardroom. And they quickly said to themselves, okay, forget about 65 watt. Forget about charging the thing in half an hour, 4,000 milliamps. We got to get 4,000 milliamp charge in 17 minutes. And we got to do it at 100 watt. Because that's how we roll. And we're not going to... We're not going to come with some flashy name like Super VOOC. We're just going to tell you what it is. Supercharge Turbo. Mm. Just going to tell you what it is. We don't need no VOOCs. Ain't no VOOCs around here. So they showed off this ridiculous 100-watt charging, and it just obviously buried the 65-watt version, as it would. They can charge a 4,000 milliamp hour battery in 17 minutes, as I said. They're saying that this thing can actually outperform laptops when it comes to charging. Well, it makes sense, right? A lot of even bigger laptops. Well, look at this. I got this Type-C power brick right here, and this is a 96-watt for the latest MacBook Pro, which is an upgrade from the 85-watt. These things have enormous batteries in them.
Yes.
So now we're talking 100 watts on the phone? You ready for this, Will? You ready for this life over here?
Not really. Is it going to look like that, though? The
I would MacBook have to charger? Assume that...
If probably a little bit bigger, right?
Well, no, because you remember the 65-watt that shipped with the Renault Ace? It was pretty small for a 65-watt.
Yes.
And the charger that I've been using for many of my devices, I did a video on it. I'm not remembering the name right now. It's Energy, I believe.
Oh, right.
It's also, I think, 65 watts, and they were able to miniaturize it substantially by using new technologies inside of the actual charger away from the traditional stuff. I believe it's called GaN. Is that correct? It's a G, small A, type, large N. I might have that wrong. Gallium nitride USB charger. And so you can shrink these things down and get substantially more power. So that's a 60 watt. Am I correct? The Energy that I was using there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a 60 watt. So there is stuff happening in charger land where you can deliver more power without the huge footprint. In fact, this power brick is the same size or very close to the 85 watt that you're using right there. And this is, 11 more watts. So I don't know I don't think they're using GaN in here, but all those cool little chargers, like the one from the Unbox Therapy video, I use that charger at home on so many different devices, that little one. So anyway, I would say they're probably implementing some technology like that so the thing is not huge, even though it's a 100-watt fast charge going on. Now, the question is, when does this technology release and with which device? The indication here via gizchina.com is that the Xiaomi Mi Mix 4 will be the flagship to deliver this incredible charging tech. So that's something to look forward to. I'm obviously excited to test it out. That's just wild. It totally changes, as I mentioned in the other video, it changes the way in which we interact with these devices. The idea of always being tethered every night for a charge or having the thing constantly connected to an outlet. I know it doesn't seem like a lot to charge your device in an hour or something like that, but it's an hour that your phone spends on the wall. If you're recharging fully in 17 minutes, it's just all of a sudden now you're not nervous about where's my battery at? What level is it at? Am I going to have enough? I'm about to go on the trip. I'm about to leave the house. Is there a car charger? And 17 minutes up until the last minute, you could be, I got to grab that charge. And then you eat your breakfast cereal. And by the time you're done, it's done.
Really impressive. Does this make you nervous? The fast charge?
Why am I nervous? We're charging too fast these days?
Might be.
We're redlining.
Yeah.
One too many coffees for Willie Do. What? You're just saying the health of the battery over time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it might cause an explosion or something.
Yeah. So there is some conversation about the health of a battery long after a long period, what happens to the capacity, because batteries might not like to be charged this quickly. For me, it's not a huge issue because I change phones so much. But I've seen people talking, for example, about AirPods battery life, how they're a disposable product. Because if you use them every day in a year, they're not holding a charge anymore. So it is a concern. It depends how long you hope to hold on to the product for. For me, that would never come up. But I understand that's not the case for many people. That said, you don't necessarily always need to use the fast charge capability. You could plug it into a slow charger too, if you really cared. But part of me, I assume there's been some thought from Xiaomi, Oppo, and others about techniques in order to promote better long-term life within the device.
So maybe dissipate heat.
And there must be, there's got to be ways baked in to kind of chill at certain, there might be a way. There might be a setting.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid, Will.
Okay.
I'm moving forward into the fast charge future. Next up, we have a weird one. This is a story in Uber situation. I don't use Uber that much anymore, but I was using it for a while when I was traveling more often. Pretty much every city I'm going to, I'm just opening the Uber app. Around here, I'm not using it as much. To the airport or something, maybe. But you may have heard there's been some issues that arise where maybe some conflict or dispute between a rider and a driver, or a driver does something bad and a person makes a claim against the driver, and maybe there's no, and then Uber gets all this bad press, and the stock gets impacted, and obviously it's a very, very highly evaluated companies worth a few dollars.
Yes.
Uber.
The unicorn.
Uber is worth a couple of dollars.
Yes.
So they've got a new strategy, it appears, or at least they're testing a new strategy to try to protect passengers and drivers from ever encountering those situations. And that technique is to audio record all rides, have an audio recording of all rides. This will initially be on the driver side of the ride. It's the driver will have the audio recording. They're testing it in Mexico and Brazil next month, at which point they will decide whether or not to bring it to the US. So people watching this, I suppose, can have their say before this takes place. It's called Audio Record in Ride, and they claim it ensures passenger and driver safety. As I mentioned, by default, it's just going to be the driver who has it enabled. If you want to activate it as a passenger, you have to go into your safety toolkit, and there's too many steps. I don't think a lot of people are going to use it, but apparently the way this works is that it's encrypted and that the driver can't go back and listen to his or her audio recordings. Instead, only HQ can hear them in the event that they need them, or potentially law enforcement. But I still feel like for the average individual, it from a privacy perspective, it just feels a little strange. You know, there's a lot of people, Will, they're using Uber. It's a night out on the town. You would know, guy like you. You're out there, you know? Friday night, guy like you. Willie do Friday night. It's a different guy. There's you on a Thursday afternoon after a Starbucks with Otis, and then there's Friday night, Willie do.
TGIF.
Right? Yeah. And so maybe you're having a time, as you would. You got all your pals. And you're getting a bit loose-lipped. About to take a ride back, you're getting loose-lipped.
Yeah.
You're just spouting. And you don't want to even think that there's any record of that taking place. You're just in the back seat. You know, you had a few drinks, whatever you did.
Yeah.
I didn't do it. You did it. Look, I'm just saying, I've been in enough scenarios where it's a very intimate environment in the back of an Uber.
Yeah.
It's nighttime. Might not be processing it, the fact that there's a record or recording. I get it. They're saying, hey, no one's going to hear it, but you got to trust that that's the case, that it couldn't be used against you in some circumstances, something. Because all of a sudden, what was that scandal? It was hockey players. Yeah. Hockey players were being recorded, and then the driver went public with it and screwed up the whole culture of the team because they were talking about their coach.
Right.
They didn't realize they were being recorded. So it brings up all kinds of privacy and ethical concerns, and it isn't rolling out yet. They're, like I said, they're testing in Mexico and Brazil. So if you're a regular Uber passenger and you hate the idea, you could probably let them know right now. You could tweet at them. You could do whatever you want to do. Maybe it never shows up. But then again, on the flip side, maybe you like it. I'll go to another scenario late at night. You travel by yourself. Guy's a weirdo in the front seat. Mm. Well, I'm not saying that Uber, I never had a bad experience. The Uber drivers all been really cool. So I don't want to suggest that's the case, but people are people and it's possible. And then at which point you're thinking to yourself, man, thank goodness all these are recorded.
Right.
Because now I just feel better that at least there's some track record, some record somewhere.
So it's going to be recorded and it's going to be stored into, like, I guess
in the cloud. It gets sent to Uber HQ.
Right.
And then only in the event that it's needed.
Right. They can pull it up.
Because they've had issues, man. Uber has had some really bad press. Now, several states in the United States, they have wiretapping laws. I think they're called statutes, in fact, where both parties must consent in order to be recorded. No one can unknowingly be recorded. That's only in certain states. Other states might not have those rules and regulations. But even in those states, you can imagine you book the ride and you could consent maybe right within the app. I don't know how they'll implement it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm a bit split. What about you, Will? Do you care? Do you want to be recorded in the Uber, the audio, for your own safety?
Yeah, I'm kind of split too. Because for the safety issue, like I would like to have like a recording if something does go wrong.
Yes.
That does happen. But at the same time, if we're kind of like drunk or something.
Oh, you're doing, yeah.
It's I don't know. It's a weird situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like there are some Uber drivers that actually record the video. Backseat.
Yeah, yeah, video. Yeah, video. Yeah.
Have you ever?
I never experienced that.
No. I wonder if they ask.
I mean, and there's plenty of them probably running dash cams that are also running audio. I assume that could be going on, but I think that this particular test being across the board without any extra equipment implies that instantaneously they're accumulating so much more data, and it's the piece that they're getting it. It doesn't belong to the driver.
Right.
See, so now the driver has to think, as opposed to if he owns the footage in his own car, you can't get access. You know what I'm saying? Right. Neither can head office. So
yeah,
I could see the argument from a driver perspective that, hey, I don't want to be surveilled all the time either.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to live my life. What about when I go grab the Wendy's like Vin just did?
Yeah.
Then what? Are you listening?
Like you're judging me?
Yeah. Are you judging my Wendy's right now? Although I suppose that's not in a ride. Anyway, all kinds of ethical questions going on there. Of course, the viewers of the show, they can let me know in the comments if it matters to them or not, if they want to be recorded or not when they're in the next Uber ride. Here's a cool one, Will. This one, it's just a simple, but such a cool idea that makes a lot of sense. I have one of these covers on my truck. It's called a tonneau cover. And a lot of people use them to protect the contents of the bed of the pickup truck. If you store things in there, you make it, in some cases, watertight, so you're not getting moisture in there. A lot of people, they keep tools in the back. They want a lockable cover. This company, WorkSport, they created a cover that harvests solar energy. So it's got its own solar panels embedded into the cover. Now, a lot of covers already work in the fashion that they're outlining here, where it folds on top of itself in order to allow you to use the bed of the truck without the cover, just by folding it up. But we're on the cusp right now, in a big way, of the electric pickup becoming the scene. The event, actually, the time we're filming is Tesla's event for their Cybertruck is tonight.
Yes.
You have Rivian talking about their trucks that are coming up. So the electrification of the pickup truck is happening rapidly, and all of a sudden you're starting to see the accessory market potentially also jump on board, jump onto the hype train. Because if you had one of these tonneau covers with the solar panels, you could actually feed that power into the battery into the electrical system of the vehicle and increase your range or pick up an emergency charge or a little extra juice. Now, when they describe the device here, they say they mostly imagine it'll be used for to charge tools and things like that in the back, because it'll also have its own storage battery, but it could be wired up to send electricity into the vehicle's battery as well. There's a few concerns that people have about heat, because as you know, Will, solar panels get hot, particularly if you're using them in certain climates. You might have this contraption over here in Arizona or something, and it's just getting slammed by the sun intentionally. What if you touch it? What if you lift it up? How do you deal with all that? Because, you know, with the cover, the ones that exist now, you're touching them all the time. They get hot, but not that kind of hot. And then on top of that, what about the battery inside of there? How do you protect that and all the various aspects? So there's a lot of questions that come up. Some more specifics here. The cover will be connected to a 2-kilowatt battery bank placed in the bed. And then the bank has a 1-kilowatt breakaway unit. There's going to be a couple of different configurations available. There's going to be a 4,000-watt inverter. Its purpose is to allow an off-grid powering of 110-volt AC tools when you need it. So this could be a common application for a work truck. You can imagine you don't want to empty out your battery if you're charging up a bunch of devices in the bed of the pickup. You might have the power tools, the drills, and things like this. Yeah. You could just people put a saw in the back of the truck as well. They're cutting wood and trim and things like this. You could come off of this battery instead of the vehicle battery, which could be, especially if people move towards electric pickup trucks, that could be important to have that battery backup as well, as opposed to sucking from the actual. So they're calling it a potentially electric jerry can. You know what a jerry can is, Will?
What is a jerry can? It sounds really familiar.
A jerry can, don't ask me why it's called a jerry can. A jerry can is the way that you transport fuel. It's a portable container for the transportation of fuel. A lot of people would keep something like this in the bed of a pickup truck. In emergency situation, you have gas. So they're saying, what is the electric equivalent of that for an electric vehicle? Maybe it's this thing with its own onboard battery. You get it wired up to the car. Now, in emergency situation, you pull off that one. You can go a little distance to get to the next charger. So it's very cool. It's a simple thing, but you sit there. Sometimes the best innovations are simple ones. Like, why is nobody doing that yet? So this is one of those moments. You have a giant space at the bed of the pickup truck. The pickup truck's always outdoors anyway. It's just like, it's a free opportunity right there.
Yeah.
But again, assuming you can overcome the things that I mentioned.
Yes.
With heat and all the rest of it. So your futuristic pickup truck. Then again, who knows what Elon puts out later this evening? He could put out some crazy thing that doesn't even have a typical bed dimension. And now you're wondering, or maybe it already has something like that built in. Who knows? You know, Elon's always, who knows? Because he's got the Cybertruck coming tonight, or at the point at which you're watching this, the Cybertruck. You know about it. You just saw it. In which case, you can talk in the comments about whether or not you can integrate a cover like this one. Speaking of Elon, I don't know if you saw this, Will. His rocket there, his Starship, it blew up. You were really excited about this thing. It was all shiny.
Yeah, it looked really old school.
Old school, retro, like space age, atomic era type of vibe to it. The Starship MK-1 is what it was called. Maybe they'll rebuild it. But they're probably moving on to some next version now. It was undergoing some testing, which is part of the process of developing something like this. It was undergoing some testing for extremely low temperatures. It blew something called, it blew its lid during something called cryogenic testing. Cryogenic, that's very, very cold, Will. And you do this type of testing, of course, to replicate the type of situation you're going to encounter if you were a spaceship. Well, some of you might encounter.
Yeah.
Cold temperatures. And so this thing blew up during this testing. It's unfortunate, but fortunate. It's one of those situations where Elon came out and said, you know, that's sort of the point of this testing, is you're trying to, you're almost trying to push it till it breaks so that you can avoid in your next version. You're almost, it's kind of like the Galaxy Fold. Except you can't buy the Starship, yeah. But you're testing in public, sort of. Everybody's got their eyes on this, and you're testing in public. So apparently now they go back to the drawing board with the new information they've gathered via this test, and they improve the MK3 design. So Elon's quote here regarding the MK1's value is that it was a manufacturing pathfinder. I love that terminology. A manufacturing pathfinder. This episode of Lou Later is a content pathfinder. Content development pathfinder. We don't know where we're going. We're looking for a path, but that's the part you're looking for. In other words, Will, nothing is a finished product in human culture and technology. Yeah. It's always just looking. We're always...
It's a voyage.
Really. Yeah.
The frontier.
Yeah.
Trying to find it, you know.
We're just trying to find a path out here as human beings. Sometimes you pick a path, you go to the left, you got a lot of brush, you're getting scratched.
Yeah.
You turn around, you grab another one. Mm-hmm. You look for a little less resistance and friction, or you double down. You say, nah, I know this is the right way to go. And even though it's hard work, maybe you push through some of that brush, and all of a sudden you come to some extreme, some beautiful clarity. You push through the brush. Yeah, no. It's not oasis. You push through the brush, and then it's a valley. You're at the top, sort of, like it was gruesome. You're at a ridge. Okay, it's rocky, but you look down, and you see a beautiful, fertile valley. You know what a fertile valley looks like?
Lush.
Yeah, it's green.
Yeah.
You didn't see green for a while, because you were in the bush, getting scratched up. Yep. You didn't know if it was going to happen. So anyway, he's on a similar path, except to space. And this was a manufacturing pathfinder, noting that flight design is quite different. Once you've got to start going for flight, once you start talking about space, space is hard. Space is hard, Willie Doo, and space is cold. Okay? So that's, as far as paths go, that's a difficult path up there. Let's just remember that. All right. Remember we talked about the Trump and Tim Cook thing, the Apple in Austin, the Mac Pro. My goodness, people are mad. People are mad at Trump and Tim.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it goes politics, Will. And I don't want to go to politics over here, but he was, it's kind of funny. He goes down there and he marches around the plant there in Austin. And he's got Tim by his side, and Tim's showing him the Mac Pro. Like, the video's out there. You can watch it. I think Ivanka Trump tweeted out a short video clip of the two of them looking at the new Mac Pro. And Trump is taking all kinds of credit for this manufacturing facility. And people are mad that he's claiming so much responsibility for it. And the reason is because the facility, the actual plant that he was looking at, has existed for a while. Okay, the plant that he's looking at, he did not open it, even though his tweet says he opened it. It's been there since 2013, I believe. The original Mac Pro, the trash can Mac Pro that I had, came from that facility. It's actually not Apple. It's a contractor to Apple. They're called Flex. And they employ about 500 people. It's not an enormous manufacturing facility either. As you know, the Mac Pro is a higher margin, lower volume product for professionals and things like this. But Trump was walking around basically saying, look, the economy's doing great. Look, we got, there are things here with Apple logos and we are standing in America, is what happened.
And I'm going to announce that I opened up this factory.
Yeah, and he went, you know, but that's his thing, isn't it? Here's the tweet. Today, I opened a major Apple manufacturing plant in Texas that will bring high-paying jobs back to America. Today, Nancy Pelosi closed Congress because she doesn't care about American workers. That's what he does. All right. You have to read between the lines. You have to read between the lines. You have to look into it. No, he did not open this place up, but I'm going to do a little bit of a translation. The New York Times did a similar article just breaking down what actually happened. Apple, when they announced the new Mac Pro, kind of insinuated that they were done with Austin, that they were going to do it in China. It was easier for them, probably less expensive. Then, of course, Trump has been on the whole thing with the tariffs and all that, trying to incentivize companies not to do that. So really, the real tweet is essentially, look, I made sure Apple is at least doing a portion of their assembly in America instead of in China like everything else. But we have to soften that up a little bit because in the scope of everything Apple's doing, this is relatively insignificant. It's not an iPhone. I don't want to downplay it, though. It is cool that it's just so rare to see any product with an Apple logo doing anything to it besides designing it in America, right? It's an interesting thing to take place regardless. So I don't want to completely squash it, but it is relatively insignificant in the scope of Apple's landscape. And there's millions of people employed in China on behalf of Apple by comparison. And this facility of contractors, about 500 people. But just to finish out the whole thing here, as happy as they are, Apple is investing pretty heavily in the Austin area, and they put out their very own press release. They're breaking ground on an enormous campus, which will be a lot more like their typical office environment as opposed to manufacturing or assembly. But it is significant. It's 244,000 square feet. No, that's the Mac Pro facility. I take that back.
This one's 133-acre campus.
130. This is way bigger. It's a $1 billion, 3 million square foot campus. So the current Mac Pro assembly, to put it in comparison, is 244,000 square feet. This new office building campus thing is 3 million square feet. And it's going to cost $1 billion. And this is going to have 5,000 employees with the capacity to grow to 15,000 in 2022. Again, compared to the 500 people that work at Flex with the assembly of the Mac Pro. So it's kind of a little bit of everything in there. It's not completely false, but it's just a matter of digging a little bit deeper and seeing exactly what's happening. There's obviously a relationship between Trump and Tim Cook, and there's obviously incentive for Tim Cook to maintain this relationship because of the impact that these tariffs could have on Apple, specifically if Trump's able to push them through. So they're bargaining in front of our eyes. They're shaking hands. They're bargaining in front of our eyes. Tim gets to avoid some tariffs by having this relationship. He gets to ease up on that. Trump gets the photo op at the facility that's actually from 2013. And everybody's happy. You see how that goes? Mm-hmm. It's an agreement. They both. So you get to take from that whatever you choose. But I just wanted to add the piece that Apple is doing big business in Austin to the tune of a $1 billion campus. It's not just this small flex enterprise at 500, even though that's it for actual assembly for the time being. All right, last one for me, maybe the most exciting of the bunch, sticking with Apple for a second. My goodness, Will, this was, when we were talking peak Willie Doo the other day, this was probably the main reason we were talking peak Willie Doo, because he, behind the scenes, without telling me, had set up this device to arrive that is the coolest, most rare, most unique device, I think, in terms of smartphones, that's ever shown up on a channel on Unbox Therapy. Shot the video. Go check out the video. It's either out right now or it's coming out very shortly on the Unbox Therapy channel. It is an unboxing of a limited edition, one of nine customized iPhone 11 Pros that has a piece of Steve Jobs' actual turtleneck inside of the Apple logo embedded in there. This is some type of museum, some type of relic, some type of artifact. It's when he was wearing the Next. He switched from Apple, got ousted, started another computer company, and started the trend of wearing the iconic black turtleneck all at this time. This little square piece of fabric is from an actual turtleneck that he wore that was sold at auction by an assistant of his right during that era. So pre-iPhone, but it right in the, who knows, maybe he was already starting to imagine the eventual iPhone at that moment he was wearing that turtleneck. Who knows? It's crazy. Like when this thing showed up, I almost didn't believe it when I heard it. I'm like, they did what? So they took this cool artifact and found a way to encase it into an iPhone, which then became custom titanium and all kinds of other cool things, engravings. It's got Steve Jobs' signature engraved on it. Just an incredible piece of memorabilia that you can actually use because it also happens to be the latest iPhone. This company has, in fact, done it with a number of different artifacts. They're doing a similar device for Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, the Beatles. I believe in the future they're working on a Michael Jackson version. All of those are very cool, but this one to me is the most significant because it's got that extra storyline, that piece where the iPhone is the product with featuring the artifact from the individual who first imagined the iPhone. That's the connection which just pulls it fully together. It's very expensive. It's over $6,000. There are only 9 on planet Earth, but it's incredibly exciting. It was a very exciting video for us. Very exciting item. But I can't show you here because you got to go watch the full video. It's incredible. In the video, by the way, we actually do a comparison to the very first iPhone. So it's unbelievable. If the video is there right now, go watch it. If you go there and it's not there yet, it's coming in like an hour or two from the point at which you watched this video. So exciting times around here. Peak Willie Doo. Now you believe me, people out there in the world. You were like, yeah, okay, Willie Doo peak, maybe. But then people had high expectations. They said, no, Willie Doo could probably take it higher. Some people thought that. Now they understand the actual altitude that Willie Doo is capable of reaching. Remember I was talking, you come through the bush, you're on that cliff, you're on that peak.
Yeah.
It's a high altitude over there.
Stratosphere.
You know what happens in a high altitude? Well, it becomes harder to breathe when you get up high. Just remember that when you're out there getting those free coffees. All right?
I have asthma.
That's it.